Radio Prague News. Some 120,000 people flocked to the southeastern city of Brno on Sunday for a mass served by Pope Benedict XVI. Prague Archbishop Miloslav Vlk has assessed his 20 years in office with a critical eye, saying there was little to show for his efforts. And Prime Minister Jan Fischer has warned Czechs the coming year would not be an easy one. Serving an open-air mass attended by some 120,000 believers in Brno, Pope Benedict XVI warned that scientific and economic progress were not enough to guarantee the moral welfare of society. Preaching in the largely secular Czech Republic, the pontiff said people needed to be liberated from material oppressions, but more profoundly, they needed to be saved from the evils that afflict the spirit. During Sunday's mass, the Pope consecrated crosses and statues while hundreds of priests distributed hosts among believers. On Monday, Pope Benedict will serve Mass in the town of Stará Boleslav, north of Prague, the centre of celebrations held in honour of St. Wenceslas, the patron saint of the Czech nation, who was murdered in the town on September 28th of 935. The Pope's three-day visit to the Czech Republic is a pastoral one intended to bring a message of faith and hope to Czechs 20 years after the fall of communism. The controversial issue of property restitution was discussed only marginally following a meeting with Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarsio Bartone on Saturday. The Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer said the Vatican was ready to defer property disputes with the Czech state for the time being in view of the economic crisis. Prague Archbishop Miloslav Vlk has assessed his 20 years in office with a critical eye, saying there was little to show for his efforts. In an interview for Czech public television on Sunday, the cardinal pointed out that the restitution of church assets remained unresolved, as did the ownership of Prague's famous St. Vitus Cathedral. He said he had failed to push through an amendment to the church law, and the Czech Republic was one of the few remaining countries which do not have a treaty with the Vatican. Cardinal Vlk said there had been no lack of effort on his part, but that political circumstances had not been in his favour. The head of the Czech Catholic Church is planning to retire from his post before the end of the year. Caretaker Prime Minister Jan Fischer on Sunday warned Czechs the coming year would not be an easy one. He said people would feel the burden of both rising unemployment, expected to reach 10%, and the austerity package introduced by the government. The Prime Minister said the planned tax hikes and cost cuts were inevitable if the Czech Republic wanted to avoid serious long-term problems. According to the Prime Minister's estimates, the austerity package should not increase household costs by more than 1,000 crowns. The package of tax hikes and spending cuts will reduce next year's budget deficit to 162.8 billion crowns, that is 5.2% of GDP. A tight rein on spending was the Prime Minister's condition for staying in office, and after 2 days of heated debate, the package was approved by all parliamentary parties with the exception of the Communists. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Monday is expected to be another bright and sunny day, to be followed by a sharp drop in temperatures to around 16 degrees, overcast skies and rain. You'll find more news stories at www.radio.cz. But for now, that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. In today's show, Pope Benedict XVI is on a three-day visit to the Czech Republic. We'll break with our regular Sunday programming for a report from Brno, where the pontiff served mass for some 120,000 people this morning. Then you can hear a fresh edition of Mailbox with Pavla Horáková and join David Vaughan for Czech Books, in which he will talk to the author of a rather unexpected bestseller on the Czech market, a book called The Economy of Good and Evil. All that coming your way, so do please stay with us. The eyes of the Catholic world are currently on the Czech Republic, where everything this weekend revolves around the three-day visit of Pope Benedict XVI. On Sunday, the Pope served an open-air mass for thousands of Czech and foreign believers in the city of Brno. Yet Radio Prague's Jan Richter is covering the Pope's visit, and we go over now to Brno to find out what the atmosphere is like. So, Jan, I understand people have been congregating there since 4 a.m.
People have been coming here since earlier than that. There were several thousand people camping overnight at the airstrip here near Brno in South Moravia. It's a beautiful and sunny Sunday morning, and welcome Benedict XVI, God, when he arrived here shortly after 10 a.m. Was much warmer than the one he received in Prague on Saturday, where there was only a few thousand people. Here, it looks like the estimates were really well-founded because the numbers could exceed 120,000, 130,000. Talked to many of the pilgrims before the mass began. There are people from Slovakia, there are people from Poland, from Austria, and from Germany, and some other countries. But of course, most of them, I would say, are from the Czech Republic, and particularly from Moravia. You see lots of Moravian flags flying in the air, which is a very unusual sight. People wearing folklore costumes, the atmosphere is very warm and very spiritual, which is something Pope Benedict really stressed.
Clearly, this is the highlight of the Pope's three-day visit. What was the Pope's main message to believers?
Well, the Pope's sermon that ended only literally a few minutes ago centered around one word and one concept, that was hope. He said that there will always be hope in God and in God's word. And he said that historical experiences have shown us that wherever people have pushed God and hope out of their horizons in their everyday lives, it ended in some absurd consequences. The main focus of the whole visit, for the three-day visit of Pope Benedict XVI to the Czech Republic, is pastoration, which means bringing people closer to the Catholic Church, fomenting the faith of Catholics, and bringing people who are perhaps looking for some more spirituality in their lives closer to the Church. It is doubtful, of course, whether one visit can change that, but I was asking people here what they thought of this, and they said Pope will definitely show the way, lead the way, and bring more people to the Catholic community.
Well, clearly this is a big day for Brno, and I understand that many of those people who have come to see him there intend to follow in his footsteps and to stay close to him for as long as possible. Where is the Pope heading next? What's on the agenda?
Well, the Pope is actually not visiting the city of Brno as such. He landed on the airstrip. I can see his plane right now. And after the mass is over, he will board his plane again once more and fly back to Prague. On Sunday afternoon, he's meeting the academic world. He's going to talk to students and professors and scholars at the Vladislav Hall of Prague Castle. So that's going to be another highlight, of course, of this day. And scholars and experienced Pope watchers believe that that will be the actual intellectual message, so to speak, to the Czech people. That's where the Pope will deliver this kind of message.
Jan Richter there reporting from Brno, and if you're interested in learning more, then tune in to our special feature about the Pope's three-day visit to the Czech Republic on Tuesday. And of course, we'll be reporting on his progress in our news bulletins. Now, we return to our regular Sunday programming. Here's Pavla Horáková with Mailbox.
Thank you for tuning in to Mailbox, Radio Prague's Listener's Letters program. First up, we have this email from Christine Brazé from the Canadian city of Ottawa.
It's 3:15 a.m. and as usual I have CBC Radio overnight on with your program. I heard you mention a listener in Montreal, so I thought I'd send a hello, we're here, from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. When I was in my teens backpacking around Europe in 1985, I stayed 7 days in Prague and fell in love with the city and its generous people. While I've heard the city's changed a lot since then, even still, it will always have a special place in my heart.
We are happy to hear that Canada is listening, as Christine put it in the subject of her email, and equally we would like to know whether Australia and New Zealand are listening. The problem is that transmission paths from Central Europe to Australia and New Zealand are quite a bit influenced by variations in shortwave propagation conditions, and that's why monitoring observations and reception reports from that region are especially useful for the frequency management of Radio Prague. So if you can hear us down under, please let us know in whichever way and tell us what the signal is like. There is a series of beautiful QSL cards featuring historic steam locomotives to be sent as a thank you for your reception reports. Meanwhile, your comments are still coming in regarding the new design of Radio Prague's website. Henrik Klemets from Sweden writes,
"Here is what I have to say regarding your web page. My mail was posted on September the 3rd, but so far the Spanish language service has not mentioned my comments. Maybe I ought to have sent you my comment in the first place, as I can see the topic has come to the fore in your mailbox. To sum things up, I am unhappy with the new look. Never change a winning team. I used to check 3 or 4 of your language sites regularly, but now I'm afraid I won't be doing that anymore."
Thank you for that comment. We will pass it on to the internet section along with this observation from Jonathan Murphy from Ireland, who had commented on the new website before and now responds to another listener's view aired 2 weeks ago.
"Glad you're getting reaction to the new website. I would agree with the listener who said there is a little too much white in the background. The blue was nice. Could you offer a more detailed search function, for example, allowing results to be given by date order?"
Thank you for the comments. We will forward all your feedback to our internet department. Now let's hear from another Canadian listener, Donna Jilhooley.
"I live in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, which is at the head of Lake Superior in the centre of Canada. I heard a programme in the middle of the night which featured an eclectic group of musicians, Chinese, Kurds and so on, who formed what I think is called the All-Star Fugitive Orchestra. How do I find out more about them and where do I go on your website to replay the programme so I can hear the music again?"
What you heard was last week's edition of Magic Carpet, hosted by Petra Doruška. The band is called the All-Star Refugee Band, and you can find the whole program on our website at www.radio.cz/en/static/magic-carpet. Staying with music, our listener from Italy, Andrea Lazzeri, recently wanted to know more about the song Kupše Doleva, or Forward Left, that used to be Radio Prague's signature tune in the socialist era. We played a few bars from the song recently, but Mr. Lazzeri wonders whether we still had the tuning signal from that time. We indeed do, and this is it. And before I say goodbye, here is our September quiz question for one last time. This time we'd like you to tell us the name of the woman who was born in Prague in 1896 and together with two other colleagues won the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1947. You have until Wednesday to send us the correct answer to Radio Prague 12099 Prague or english@radio.cz. Next week we will disclose the identity of the mystery person and choose 4 winners in a lucky draw. Thanks for listening today, and until next week, take care.
Pavla will be back same time next week. If you'd like to check out this week's mailbox online, you can do so at www.radio.cz. Now, in the final part of today's program, here's David Vaughan with Checkbooks.
Very warm welcome to another edition of Checkbooks, and this week we're in a cafe in a beautiful part of the Lesser Quarter of Prague, and I'm joined by Tomáš Sedláček, who is, unlike most of the people we talk to in Checkbooks, an economist. In fact, he's chief economic strategist for one of the major Czech banks. But we're not going to be talking about numbers. We're here to talk about his new book, which has just come out and has attracted a great deal of attention in the Czech Republic. It's called Ekonomie dobra a zla. In English, it could translate as The Economics of Good and Evil. Well, I'll start with a quote to try and give you an idea of the subject of this book. This is from right at the beginning of the book. Initially, people explained the world around them through myths and religion. Today, this role is played by science. It would be foolish to think that economic thinking didn't begin until the scientific age. In order to understand the economic thinking of our distant ancestors, we need to steep ourselves in their myths and philosophy. That is the aim of this book. And so, Tomáš, I suppose to put it simply, you're trying to take economics out of the box and to say that economics isn't just about number crunching, but it's connected with many other different aspects of our lives.
Yes, well, economics is a beautiful area. It's mainly to do with the way we humans behave in which we relate to each other. And I always was looking for mirrors because the only way you can look a little bit out of the box to get out of the box, and that is, of course, difficult, and it is rarely to be done without some external aid. And I use as an aid, you know, the old tales from the Old Testament or from Mesopotamia, and these people were dealing with exactly or very similar to the issues that we're dealing with today. We use mathematics mainly today and scientific rigorous approach to explain the world around us, and they explained the very same world using stories and fables and actually very beautiful way of describing how we relate to each other. So I've not put a single number in this book. Even the pages are actually numbered backwards. So it starts with -368, I think, and then it goes to the end just to, you know, bring the point across that numbers is something that's created by our society. It is a construct, a product that can serve us and should serve us, but sometimes it also binds us. And if the only way that we can look around is through numbers and through statistics, and that sometimes is helpful, but sometimes it isn't helpful and can be misleading.
And I must say, as someone who doesn't really understand economics, I was very much gripped when I started reading the book, and I was fascinated by some of the parallels that you drew. For example, there's one point where you, I think slightly with tongue in cheek, you describe Joseph in the Old Testament as the first Keynesian. When the Pharaoh asks Joseph to interpret his dream, and it's the dream about the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine, Joseph gives him the sound Keynesian advice that during the 7 years of plenty, he should stock up with grain for the 7 years of famine, which he consequently does. Good sound economic advice, and this is from the Old Testament.
It's a very interesting story. It is the first ever recorded business cycle, so to speak, in the history of mankind. And the story has a lot to say to us. First of all, we don't hear why the cycle happened. There is no explanation in the Bible. It just happened. Secondly, the Pharaoh saw the future in dreams. Now, this is today expected of economists to see the future, to say when the crisis will come and when it will be over. Now, we don't have these dreams anymore. We don't look for reality or for the future in dreams or in visions as the Asians did. Now, we look in statistical models and we can see that they didn't help us very much, not in this case. And I then fast forward the story to this age. And we also, as mankind or as our civilization, or the Western civilization, as we like to refer to ourselves, we also had very good 7 years of plenty from the year 2001 till the year 2007, 2008. It's been very good 7 years, and we've not stocked up anything. We've actually indebted our civilization even more and even further. So despite the fact that this is a very ancient story, thousands of years old, or we should have actually learned something, we haven't, and we've actually been foolish, and we've not stocked up any grain. On the contrary, the storehouses are empty after the 7 years of plenty that our civilization has had. And not only that, they're full of IOUs, you know, lying on the table. And so I like to take these stories out and say, listen, this is a story that every child can understand. This is a story that we tell to our children before they go to sleep. And yet our super duper economic models have, you know, produced a situation in which even a small child could see a much wiser solution than what we've actually chosen as a civilization.
And you put it rather nicely in the book. I'll quote again. If modern economics feels confident to explain the way churches function, or to carry out an economic analysis of family relationships, often offering new and interesting insights, why shouldn't we also look at theoretical economics in the way that we look at a system of religious or private relationships? In other words, why not try looking at economics from an anthropological point of view? So, just what you're saying, turning economics on its head and actually saying, what can the way that we see the world, the way that we tell stories, as you say, tell us about economics. This is something that really has been neglected by economists in recent years, isn't it? There has been a tendency more and more to see economics as a science.
If we want to interpret the world, we ask the economists, what's happening, what is to come? We ask the physicists, we ask the scientists. Now, science also believes in something. We have our Ten Commandments, we have our belief system. We economists must believe in rationality. We must believe in egoism. Once you question that, a fatwa is almost placed on your head. You no longer are an appropriate economist. So we have these sets of beliefs that nobody really understands. I mean, if you look in theoretical physics, we believe something that we don't understand. And it's an interesting thing. If you speak to theoretical physicists and you ask them how much of the reality around us can you actually explain, they will say, well, around 5 to 7%. I mean, the rest of that is still embedded in mystery. But we kind of believe that we understand what's happening around us, and we don't. The only thing that we can predict is the things that are predictable, which are exactly the things that we don't care about. We want to know the unpredictable things. And this crisis is a good example of how we can predict only things that follow the same pattern that they followed in the past. And this is something that I try to point this fact out, that we shouldn't think that we are wiser or in any way more educated than the ones that were here before us.
I was fascinated when I read the concluding few pages of your book, that you really put quite a passionate case for bringing ethics, I suppose, to put it simply, back into economics. Could you maybe expand a little bit on what you're trying to say as the message of the book?
Well, you know, economists are believed to be the ones who have no values. They're value-free, so to speak. And then we are expected to give absolutely value-free advice. Now, this is very rarely the case. All economists are believers in something. They might be believers in free market. They may be believers in regulated market. That is a concern of each individual. My point here is that if you don't admit this, you're not really going to get very far, because you have a choice of a school, a choice of a model, and that model you choose according to the results that you really want to see. So if you believe in globalization and free market, you choose the models that are appropriate, and then you arrive, abracadabra, you arrive to the very same conclusion that you entered into text. So if we pretend that we are, you know, value-free science, but we're not really, then that can lead to a great mismatch. And secondly, economists are confronted with the question, what are we to do? And that is a ethical question. And this is something that we economists have avoided in the past 100 years. I mean, the word ethics has become a bad word, a root word. Yet, economics has started as an ethical discourse. Adam Smith was a moral philosopher. David Hume, Thomas Malthus, and others were chiefly moral philosophers. And this is where economics was born. And today we try to get away from this cradle, from this origin of the discourse. And it can lead to very dangerous situations.
One concept that you criticize repeatedly in the book is the idea of the so-called invisible hand of the market. This is an expression that is in the Czech Republic again and again associated with the Czech president, Václav Klaus, who is himself an economist. And he loves to come back to the idea that the economy is what drives pretty much everything in society. This is obviously something that's highly controversial, and you do polemicize with it. But I noticed that you never mentioned Mr. Klaus's name. Is he a kind of hidden adversary in your book?
He is a representative, a political representative of a very popular reading of economy as a solution to everything. I mean, all problems and all riddles of the world will be solved if we apply our method. In this, economists have become the priests of a new era, the priests of abundance, the priests of efficiency, the priests of a golden age that is to come if we all follow our advice. And I don't directly polemicize with anybody in the book. I polemicize with the idea that economy is something that is the modus vivendi of our age.
Your name has been brought up as a possible future finance minister in the Czech Republic. Do you have any political ambitions?
Well, I've turned it down after 2 days of thinking. And in my life, I've always worked very closely to politics, but I've never been a member of any political party. I value more influence than power. And if I can influence a good decision in a politician, then that is my day. I don't necessarily need to be the one who, you know, puts the stamp or, you know, takes the cream out of the pot. So if any politician is interested, I'd be very happy to offer advice, but I don't want to myself become one, not yet. I think I'm also too young for that.
Yes, I mean, that's the point I was going to make. You're still only 32, so
yes,
you've got a long career ahead of you, I hope. Which brings me to my very final question. This book has caused quite a stir. It's been talked about a lot. What's your next book going to be about?
I don't know. I've just finished. This one came out, I think, 3 months ago. Now it's being translated into English, German, Italian, Polish. There's many translations that are on the way, none of them yet finalized because this is still a new book. But when I'm falling asleep and I'm thinking maybe 2-3 years down the line, I was thinking of writing a selection of essays reflecting, for example, the topic of adventure, which is something that our society lacks. That's why we buy it in movies and in cinemas, and we kind of buy artificial danger because we lack the real danger. And I have already 12 topics selected like that, on friendship, on utility, on growth, and on a newest one that I was thinking about is artificial wealth. How much of our wealth is actually artificial today? How much of that is debt-driven from future generations? How much of our wealth is now driving on resources that we're stealing from the future that we really have no right to use? And I haven't done the calculations so far, but I guess the percentage will be quite high.
Tomáš Sedláček, thank you very much for talking to us on Radio Prague.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that edition of Czech Books has brought us to the end of this half hour from Radio Prague. But do please join us again tomorrow for a special programme devoted to the Pope's visit to the Czech Republic. That's on St. Wenceslas Day, a national holiday here in the Czech Republic. Until then, this is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.